For one reason, it's unwinnable because the president has taken off the table the one thing that might make it winnable, but not really, and that's the use of American ground forces. This is just a commentary, if you will, on military operations in general. When you're doing something like this, air power is not enough. If the objective, as the president laid out, is to destroy ISIS, you'll never do it from the air. And the history of strategic bombing tells you way back 70 years that bombing alone is inadequate if the objective is to destroy an adversary. Now, the president's whipped ground forces off the table. So what's left is creating ground forces that are indigenous, which is actually the right thing to do militarily. We saw that work at the beginning of Afghanistan, for example, in 2001. The problem is you haven't got an adequate ground force. There's the Peshmerga, but they're not everywhere and can't be because the Sunnis don't want them and the Shia don't want them. You've got an Iraqi military that basically crumpled like an empty suit earlier this year when ISIS was on the move. And you've got a Syrian opposition that clearly at this point is incapable of mounting a serious military effort against ISIS. So you haven't got a ground force. So here we are. We got an air operation going that can't win. We're not going to put American ground forces in there, and I think rightly so, because we've been there now twice in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it doesn't work. But you haven't got a substitute ground force. All of that says to me is this is not a winnable thing.
So withdrawing completely is one other alternative. Are there others other than just leaving it alone?
No, I think what you've got is often the case when you're in an operation like this. You've got to make the best of a very bad hand. Withdrawal is an option. It's clear that withdrawal leaves ISIS struggling mightily against the Peshmerga, the Syrians, Bashar al-Assad, and the Iraqis, and potentially winning. It's not clear quite what winning means. Does it mean governing Iraq? I doubt it. Does it mean owning the Sunni areas? Quite possibly. Fundamentally, what we're dealing with here, I think, Francis, is a centuries-old conflict between tribal elements in the Middle East, Shia, Sunni, based in religion, that have not worked this out over more than a century, and are still now in the process of a new round of fighting. The introduction of non-indigenous forces in almost any way can disrupt what was a stable moment, which was when Saddam Hussein was in power, but it can't solve that fundamental ethnic, religious, territorial conflict in the region. It's not a happy commentary because it doesn't point to an immediate solution. We all like immediate solutions. But it says, you know, do not go dangerously into that good night.
You write, as I mentioned, the headline of this is "The Varnish of Vietnam, Gordon, Your Peace and Foreign Policy." There's a link to it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth this afternoon. And I wonder what the parallels are that you see between what we experienced and learned from Vietnam and what we're experiencing today and will potentially learn from it.
Well, what we've learned, and I think we've learned it in most conflicts that we've fought, even before Vietnam, starting in Korea, but especially in Vietnam, especially in Iraq, especially in Afghanistan, it's preciously hard to win in ground and air battle in a country that you're occupying that's not indigenous to you, that is not your culture, that's not your government. It's terribly difficult to install a regime in these areas that is going to be succeed if it's been installed under pressure from outside forces. We see that we very often misread the indigenous conflicts and intrude in a way that tries to straighten out the mess, but it's not our fight and we can't straighten it out. We're just the intruder. All of these things were true in Vietnam. You know, in Vietnam, we were dealing with a combination of communist insurgency and nationalist insurgency. We completely misread it. We applied the wrong forms of power, and frankly, we lost. The only full-out military conflict that we can truthfully say that we've won since the end of the Second World War, really, is Gulf War I, and that was really just evicting the Iraqi army from Kuwait. It wasn't really taking anything down or changing anything in Iraq, so the goals were limited. The forces were totally unmatched. They were both conventional capabilities. We had the stronger hand, but frankly, in conflicts that are ethnic, religious, tribal, indigenous, internal, and external at the same time, we're not very good at going in and straightening out the mess.
Gordon Adams of American University and the Stimson Center, my guest. You write in Foreign Policy, leadership is not about doing something. Leadership is not about striking back. Leadership is about wisdom, knowing what you can change and what you can't change. What about what's going on there then, Gordon, based on what you've said and what you write in this piece? Can we not change? And what are our policymakers, in your view, trying to change that they shouldn't or can't?
Well, I don't think we can change the government of Syria. And frankly, we have announced we're not trying to. Asterisk on that point, however, if we set up a buffer zone inside Syria at the border with Turkey, and it's a no-fly zone, we are effectively declaring war on the Syrians, because in order to enforce a no-fly zone, the only people who can fly in that region that aren't our allies are Bashar al-Assad. And the only air defenses that we're going to be taking down are those of the Assad regime. They're not ISIS. They're Assad's. So we can't change that government. We can't change that regime. It's very clear. We can't make ethnic cohesion and political cohesion in Iraq. We've made that very clear. Staying, in my judgment, would not have made that any easier to do. It would have forestalled the kind of disaster that we're seeing happen. And we certainly can't resolve the religious and tribal and ethnic conflicts of the Middle East. We've amply proven that as well. So wisdom is stepping back, I think, even perhaps further than the president has, but at least as far as the president has, and saying other parties have got to come in to fix this. This is not ours to fix.
So let's go back to 2001, 2002 timeframe, Gordon, right after 9/11, and the understanding that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda were operating in Afghanistan, were training terrorists to potentially pull off more 9/11 type events. Even after the Bush administration began operations in Iraq, there was still a delineation across Congress and across the policy community in Washington in general, that even if you were against the operations in Iraq, Iraq was the bad war and Afghanistan was the good war. And if I'm oversimplifying, I apologize. The idea being, though, that preventing the Taliban and preventing Al-Qaeda from gaining and holding a stronghold in Afghanistan was critically important to American security interests all around the world, and especially here at home. Is that not the case in your view here, or is there some line that the Islamic State needs to cross before they can demonstrate that they're a threat outside the territory that they're trying to take now, and maybe even to the United States itself? Or how does that fit into the calculation that you're making here, Gordon?
Well, let's look back for just a second, because you raised the precedents in Iraq and Afghanistan. In my judgment, at the time, the invasion to carry out regime change in Baghdad was a bad idea, would harm our strategic interests. It made somewhat more logical sense to strike back at a Taliban regime when it was the government in Afghanistan, and that government had harbored and encouraged the very attack that had happened on the United States. That made a certain amount of sense. Of course, what we immediately did was pull the Syria Special Ops and Civil Affairs units that were operating in Afghanistan out of there to go deal with the situation we were trying to create in Iraq. So the slight, slim hope that we might have had of a different regime in Kabul was basically blown apart by that decision. In this case, IS obviously wishes the United States no goodwill whatsoever. It is equally not clear that they are focused on the United States. It is more clear that they are focused on establishing an Islamic fundamentalist power in the region. What that means outside of the region, we can't know, and our defenses against that have got to be real and capable. But the primary objective here, it seems very clear, is not the United States. It is the regimes and the borders of the Middle East that were artificial borders largely created at the end of the First World War. So it's no wonder, in a sense, this thing blew up. It's driven both by religion and by the loss of authorities of the governments that are in that region. So, no, I would say one has to be very cautious about IS, but one not assume that this is a primary adversary of the United States of America. It's not the way they've defined themselves.